and welcome to Savor. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about brie.
As in cheese.
Yes, not my friend, brie.
Or the actress, Alison Brie.
No, neither of those.
But.
those are all good delightful things. Yes.
It is time. It is about time we came back and did another cheese episode because cheddar was forever ago.
Yeah, I'd forgotten how long it had been. I think I just eat so much cheese. I was like, well, this is covered.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a friend who probably every other week we have some reason to eat cheese, like a big amount, a large amount of cheese. We have apology cheese, congratulations cheese, and the week after Thanksgiving, we did cheese-giving. And brie, I always make sure there's brie because it's one of my main four cheeses that have to be there for me to be happy. Otherwise, it won't be complete.
I love all of your lists.
I'm a very list-forward person. Everything is part of a list. There's a local cheesemaker, the Woodsman and Wife. They make one of my favorite bries. It's brie-like. I don't know if it's technically a brie.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second, sure.
Yeah, but I'm not even sure it's, like, technically a...
Oh, a brie type?
A lowercase brie. it's called Out of the Ashes. I think the rind was grown? Ashes.
Sure.
They were ashes around it.
And it's so good.
It's expensive, but it's so good.
Oh, duly noted. I'll have to look for it.
Yeah, it's downstairs.
It's
always tempting me.
Ugh.
Also, there's a wiki cheese. I didn't know that, but there's a wiki cheese.
Things that I didn't know, the word turophile, it's the word of the day. It's one who loves cheese.
Well, we're both turophiles.
Yes, we certainly are.
But this brings us to our question. Brie. What is it?
Well, brie is a category of soft ripened cheeses with mold ripened rinds, sometimes called bloomy rinds, meaning that their texture is semi-firm on the outside, like a cheddar kind of, but melty soft on the inside, even at room temperature. They're typically white to straw yellow on the inside and a matte white, maybe with a little bit of a kind of streaking or striping on the outside. And you make brie, well, there's a lot of details that you can change around, but the basics are this. You take milk. Yeah, and add something to help it coagulate, to form up into curds. Because milk is an emulsion of water and water-soluble stuff mixed evenly with little globules of fats and fat-soluble stuff. Because those globules naturally repel each other, like wee magnets in the water. You know when you try to press two negative or two positive ends of a magnet together and you can't? It's like that, but with these little fat globules. So, to get milk to stop being milk and start being cheese, you need to convince the globules to stop repelling each other and cling up.
Oh.
First, by changing the pH of the milk, which will change the charge of the globules. You can do this by adding an acid, or in the case of brie and many other cheeses, adding friendly bacteria that eat the sugars in milk and poop lactic acid.
What?
Bacteria poop.
Or you can break off some of the molecules on the edges of the globules that are making them repel. And you can do this by adding enzymes that do that whole breaking off thing. Rennet is a product made up of such enzymes. It occurs naturally in the fourth stomachs of young cows, goats, and sheep to help them break down and process milk. Makes sense. But don't worry, vegetarians. Rennet can also be made from lab-farmed bacteria poop or found in some plants like fig leaves.
I love the idea of just a farm somewhere growing bacteria poop. Just little.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of them. Industrially speaking, there's a lot of those around. A lot of the natural flavors that we eat. Yeah, all sorts of things are bacteria farmed. Anyway, back to brie cheese. So, you get your milk, you add lactic acid bacteria, maybe also rennet to it. You heat it to a temperature at which the bacteria will thrive. And the globules will form up into these solid fat and protein curds. When the curds are curdy enough, they're poured into disc-shaped molds designed to let the water and whatever water-soluble stuff is left drain off. That's called the whey.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When the discs are firm enough, they're salted or washed in a brine. Then it's time to age the cheese and create that rind that we were talking about. And the rind is formed by fungi. Usually Penicillium candidum, Penicillium camemberti, or both, but other molds or yeasts can be used. You probably add cultures of these fungi right to the surface of the cheese, then set the discs of cheese in a cool, humid place to age for at least 3 weeks, during which the cheese dries out more and the mold forms a protective rind over the surface. All of this creates that texture that's velvety soft and oozy on the inside and sort of toothsome soft on the outside, like thick fudge sauce surrounded by soft wax. Yeah, I'm sorry. That sounds really gross. I promise Brie is lovely if you've never had it. That's like the worst description that I possibly could have.
She's trying to keep you away so she'll have more Brie for herself.
Yes, well, Brie for me. The flavor is milky and grassy and a little bit savory with notes like a nuts or mushrooms. And cow milk is the most common stuff to make Brie out of, but goat milk or blends can also be used.
And it turns out a lot of us may have never had legitimate Brie. To qualify as the real deal, Brie has to come from specific areas within Île-de-France. Oh, Île-de-France. My accent game. I don't know what's going on. And this is an area that surrounds Paris.
Yes, the name comes from the historical region called Brie within modern-day Île-de-France, roughly corresponding with modern-day... Help me out here.
Saint-Emon.
I never would have gotten that. The reason that many of us have not had legitimate Brie is not that the French are like bogarting them or anything like that. They're produced using unpasteurized milk, sometimes called raw milk. And in the United States, a law set down almost 70 years ago states that cheese made from raw milk has to be aged at least 60 days. And Brie is aged less than that.
But a lot of manufacturers from other areas, cheese manufacturers, and other countries sell a product called Brie. It's not as strictly controlled as something like champagne.
There are a lot of Brie-style cheeses, including from that same region.
Yeah, and when I was looking into this, I believe you can even find, well, let's get into some legitimate Brie's, and I'll come back to this point.
Okay.
Okay, so of the so-called legitimate Brie's, there are a couple of types.
And their fame might be influenced by their production region's location in proximity to Paris.
Might be. There's Brie de Meaux, which is the finest of French Brie's.
Wheels of this cheese are made to be 14 or 15 inches in diameter, about 2 inches high. A combo of lactic acid bacteria and rennet helps curdle the milk, and at the curd stage, they are drained without adding any weights to allow for moisture retention within the curd. The wide, shallow shape, though, lets the surface dry out pretty thoroughly. The whole process takes about 30 minutes, and then they're aged for about 3 weeks. It's said to feature notes of mushrooms and almonds.
One day. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. It's that Paris field trip that we really have to take.
That was like our first... field trip, and it still hasn't happened. I don't know why our boss will not okay it.
We went to New Orleans. Isn't that close enough?
Come on. Yeah, we're already almost there. Just come on. But like I was going to say, you can buy something in the United States called Brie de Meaux, and it actually isn't that.
Right, because didn't someone copyright that name?
It did.
Here in the States? That is so tricksy.
I know. We'll touch on that more in our history bit. The second type of legitimate Brie's is Brie de Meulon.
And this uses just lactic acid bacteria to curdle the milk, from what I understand, which takes longer than lactic acid bacteria plus rennet. It takes about 18 hours. They're also aged for longer, like 4 to 8 weeks. And the wheels are made smaller, only 10 or 11 inches in diameter and like an inch and a half high. The result of all of this is a firmer cheese. It's less gooey, more gelled all the way through, and has a thicker rind. The flavor is also less delicate, with notes of salt, sour, and barnyard, like your favorite or least favorite sour beer, as the case may be.
Notes of barnyard.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are the illegitimate Brie's. Ooh, yeah.
Scandal.
I know. There is Brie de Montereau, Blue Brie, which gets an injection into the rind to create a hybrid between blue cheese and Brie.
Or the discs can be sliced in half and a layer of Penicillium roqueforti or other blue mold can be added before sandwiching and aging the discs. Other Brie types can sandwich other stuff in there, by the way, like a layer of mustard, which I want to try so much now.
Brie and mustard.
Yeah.
Mm. There's Brie Noir, and this is the result of a longer aging time, this kind of darker, blacker rind, up to 2 years. And it produces Brie with a stronger flavor, a darker, drier cheese, and a darker rind. In the area where Brie Noir is made, folks like to dip it in their café au lait for breakfast. Oh, that's another thing.
We're both just shaking our heads. Or just like, we need to go eat that immediately.
I mean, there's no question.
Yeah.
We have to.
Although that could be sold in the U.S.
You think?
Oh, yeah, because it's aged for 2 years.
Oh. We were researching this episode the day of Cheesegiving. And I went to a cheese place like, I've never had real brie, my God. And I had found all of these bries that are like the closest thing you could get in the U.S. And they didn't have any of them.
Oh, no.
Now that I know that Brie Noir could be here and it wasn't at this cheese place and therefore not on my Cheesegiving platter.
Oh. Oof. Get a cheesemonger on the horn.
Yeah, we need a resident cheesemonger.
We do.
He or she would not be lacking for work.
No. Mm-hmm. They'd be earning their money.
That's true. There's also brie with all kinds of coating, of course. And aside from just stuffing it in your face as it is, you can bake brie. That's a popular recipe. Or brie en croûte, which is brie encased in pastry and then baked. It's great with fruit and honey. And I know this is going to gross some folks out. But one of my favorite recipes with brie is a grilled sandwich with Nutella, pumpkin butter, and brie.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I had a friend once, and she was so grossed out by it. And I convinced her, you got to try just a little bit. And she likes brie enough where she came around. She loves it. And now she asks me to make it all the time. And I'm like, look, that is a special occasion sandwich. And I also don't have Nutella around because I can't trust myself around it. So
no, I feel you.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to make your own. I've given you the tools and knowledge. Go forth.
One of my favorite grilled cheese offshoots is a grilled brie and apple sandwich.
Yeah, that's a good one. Apparently, removing the tip from brie, if you cut it widthwise, when serving, is a faux pas called pointing the brie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I guess that's a very desired part.
Oh, okay. So you're supposed to only get a little bit of it in like a cross section.
Yeah.
So if you just take the whole thing. Ooh.
Yeah, it's a big faux pas. And I saw someone do it at Cheesegiving, and I resisted until later. Then I was like, you know, I saw what you did with the brie, and she was very confused. But it's the ratio of rind to cheese is like the best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, there are some super overripe cheeses, and they are called dead, and they're completely solidified.
Oh, sure. I guess if it's all dried out, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
The rind, by the way, is totally edible and tasty. So, like, don't cut it away unless you genuinely dislike the texture or the taste. And if you think you dislike the texture, try it along with some of the interior after letting your slice of brie come to room temperature for at least half an hour or 40 minutes. It's a flavor and texture combo sensation that I think is very nice.
I do too.
And I hope you would agree. Mm-hmm. The rind can, by the way, be sort of mottled or cracked through with a little bit of brown or red. That's also fine and totally safe to eat.
The first time I had brie, it usually, here in the U.S., it comes in those, like, wheels, and then it comes in the white plastic-ish wax paper type stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And then you peel that away, and it usually kind of sticks to the rind. And I thought that the rind was, like, a part of the wrapping that had just, like, attached itself to the cheese.
Sure.
So I was trying to slice
just
it
like,
off.
Sure.
Aww. And then I served it. People were like, what is this? What happened to the brie? And since a lot of us haven't had real brie, many cheesemongers express disdain for this bland, boring thing that is American brie, and anger that this has led to a palate that favors bland. Take this email from a New York cheesemonger. There is real brie, 1% literally, and then there is factory brie, lowercase b, 99%, day and night, anyone who chooses the brie found in the shittiest supermarkets, the finest supermarkets, the chicest food shops, is making a really bad choice.
Dang.
Yeah. But I love it. My palate's not bland.
I just like simple foods as well as complex ones.
Yeah.
I like eating cheese, okay? Goodness.
Yeah, cheese. There is another question we must answer here. Brie, what it's not. And that is Camembert. Because apparently there's a lot of confusion around this, and I honestly can't tell you. I don't know what Camembert. I've seen it.
It looks very similar. It tastes very similar. And in my experience, it tends to be a little bit more flavorful than most American brie that I found.
Oh.
A little bit more pungent.
So I should give Camembert a shot.
Absolutely. I would say so.
I'm sure I've had it. I just can't pinpoint when. they are very similar, but they are not the same. For one, Camembert comes from a different region, Normandy. It isn't aged in big rinds like brie, but smaller rounds that entail a different ripening process. And this also means it is covered in rind, whereas brie, which is sliced from a wheel, might not be. This impacts the ever-important rind-to-cheese ratio. And brie has more fat.
Or it can, that there are, you can have double or triple cream brie, which brings us actually to nutrition.
Oh.
Yes, nutrition will vary from brand to brand and even a little bit from wheel to wheel. But cheese is calorie dense, y'all. Mm-hmm. It was made to preserve and condense the nutrition in milk. And brie is fatty. It has about a quarter of your daily recommended intake of saturated fat, but it also has a good amount of protein, like over a tenth of your recommended daily intake, plus a smattering of vitamins and minerals, riboflavin, B12, calcium, and phosphorus. And back to that double versus triple cream thing. Okay, brie and Camembert generally both fall into the category of double creme cheeses, which means that they're made so that the dry matter of the finished product is 60 to 75% butterfat. Triple creams are made to have over 75% butterfat. And note here that the word cream being in the descriptor of these cheeses doesn't necessarily mean that they're more fattening than like regular old cheddar or whatever. Like, yes, triple cream has more fat than double cream, but both have more water content than a dry-aged cheese. So by weight, the fat content is going to be fairly comparable or maybe even lower than dry-aged cheeses. Remember that the serving size for any cheese is going to top out at about an ounce. Read labels or check online for information if this really matters to you. Or, you know, if you can, just let go and let God.
And let cheese come to my mouth.
Yes.
I mean, 1 ounce, I shudder to think what our cheese giving, how many ounces that adds up to.
It's a party.
It's true. It's a giving of the cheeses.
Yes. It's a celebration. You're allowed to have celebrations.
That's true. Sometimes it is an offering of an apology. It is many things.
Cheese.
Cheese is many things to many of us. And speaking of many of us, numbers for brie consumption are not easy to come by. I can say for myself, it's quite high probably for one person. So if anyone has access to brie numbers, let us know.
Yeah, it's a wide category.
It is. But.
But we do have.
Some history for you.
Yes. But first, we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Brie has probably been around and kicking for a while.
At least 400 years, but its exact invention point is difficult to pin down.
Very difficult. But this is a cheese that is rife with legends. Oh, there's a cheese pun there. There's so many cheese puns to be made. Anyway, there's a popular legend that tells of French Emperor Charlemagne falling in love with a soft cheese while stopping over in Roule-en-Brie Monastery, and he loved it. As he loved it, his love of it spread throughout the land. It came to be known as the king's cheese. And after the French Revolution, the king of cheeses.
Ah.
Yes. I want a cheese, like, royalty family tree so badly. Some people argue the cheese Charlemagne tried was Roquefort, but this is much disputed. Heated cheese debates have ensued.
Oh, that's my favorite kind of debate.
Heated cheese debate.
Heated cheese debate. I'd attend one of those.
I would, too. I would, too. And kind of related, let's set the scene a bit for this next part. It's the 19th century, 1815 to be exact. The Congress of Vienna. This is the party to be at. One of history's fanciest, schmanciest shindigs. Folks are schmoozing. Powerful diplomats were dividing up nations. French diplomat and well-known connoisseur of all things food, Talleyrand, gets the attention of the room, and he calls for a cheese tournament.
I like the cut of this guy's jib.
He knew what was up. I guess it was to ease the tension, or maybe he just wanted to talk cheese. I don't know. The representative from England nominated Stilton. The Dutch representative, Limburger. Switzerland, Gruyere. And then Talleyrand nominates Brie. And the vote was cast. 60 cheeses in all were nominated. And Brie was declared le roi de fromage, the king of cheese. Very dramatic indeed, I'm sure. I hope there was a ceremony, a knighting, I don't know. I hope they really did it up.
I'm picturing a little crown.
Yeah. Yeah. Aww. We both were, like, moved by the cuteness of this.
We're both inappropriately emotionally touched by, anyway, yes.
Yes. Despite its royalty status, Brie was not just reserved for nobility. Peasants ate it as well. Another story places Brie's origins long before Charlemagne in the Middle East in a saddlebag. And that might sound familiar because it's the same story we told in the cheddar episode. It's sort of the origin story of cheese at large. Maybe it was Brie. Probably not, but definitely an ancestor.
Brie de Meaux is said to date to the Roman era. Don't know about that.
Yet another legend. After King Henry IV of England's wife, Queen Margot, introduced him to Brie, he fell so in love with it, he chose it over dining with his wife, the one who introduced him to it, when given the choice.
Harsh diss.
That is. I mean, I love Brie. That was like the question they ask of, like, if it's two people, your friends.
Yeah, that's like a trolley problem. Yes. That's like the Lady and the Tiger. Goodness. All right.
However, Brie's history changed when the Congress of Vienna and much of what came out of that was abandoned. And the Franco-Prussian War tore through the region where Brie is made, doing lasting damage to their dairy industry. On top of that, industrialization pushed out the small creameries making Brie to make way for cheese factories. And to add more salt to the wound, these factories weren't even making Brie. Brie was being made in factories in a different region.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then, in 1949, skipping ahead a little, a typhoid outbreak traced back to milk prompted that legislation requiring milk and milk products to be pasteurized in the United States.
And this kind of eliminated the OG Brie of Charlemagne that was unpasteurized and eaten before it had aged too long. I mean,
yep.
Probably none of us have had whatever Charlemagne had and fell in love with. Alas. Brie really took off in the United States in the 70s and 80s, both Brie Brie and this factory in name only Brie. And then in 1980, the French government bequeathed Brie with the Appellation d'origine contrôlée, putting in place the standards for legitimate Brie. And then, yeah, concerned about all of the potential bacteria in this imported Brie, in 1987, the FDA in the U.S. re-upped the regulation that all cheeses had to either be pasteurized or aged for 60 days. You can't really get the real thing, the real deal in the United States. In fact, in the 70s, a U.S. importer trademarked Brie de Meaux so that he could put that label on cheeses in the United States that are not technically Brie de Meaux, like we were talking about earlier. You know, tricky but enterprising.
But as of 2016, the FDA said that they would look into raw milk cheeses again, having heard a lot of pushback from artisan cheesemakers here in the States. There's no word yet, though, on whether they will loosen their standing.
Ooh, FDA, if you listen.
Please get on that.
I mean, priority number one.
I mean, put a warning label on it if you have to, but goodness. Okay.
We have research to do.
We've done a little bit of research already.
We have.
We have, but... and we're going to get into some of that. But first, we're going to get into one more quick ad break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, I wanted to talk just a tiny bit about whether or not that raw milk cheese law is too restrictive. Okay, so I started to look into this whole raw milk versus pasteurized milk thing, the whole safety thing, especially when it comes to cheese and the aging of cheeses. It's a really big topic. It could probably be an entire episode unto itself. I will say that it's probably better for those of us who are immunocompromised or have some other kind of issue going on to avoid raw milk products that have not been aged in an appropriate amount of time. But I do want to say that those bacteria and molds that I talked about being part of the making of brie cheese at the top of the show, they're all non-toxic to humans. They are perfectly safe to eat. And furthermore, they all help inhibit the growth of toxic bacteria and molds in cheese.
They're like superhero mold and bacteria.
They are. Not all superheroes wear capes. Some of them poop flavors.
In your cheese.
In your cheese. And beer.
Remember that.
And yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
And sourdough bread.
Chocolate.
And pepperoni.
Coffee. The show from now on, henceforth, will just be Lauren and I listing. You know, I like we said at the top, I love a good list.
Yeah.
I think we found a true calling, which is just listing food.
Just quietly and sadly saying, saying food words into microphones. I'm sure that there's an ASMR channel just for that. Y'all write in and let us know if you want that thing. We can do it.
Oh, clearly. Clearly yeah. We can.
I have some other science, though, about the texture of brie, because I found some really cool articles about it, and I just wanted to share this with y'all. So, all right. Brie that is at the top of its game is going to bulge out of its rind at cool or room temperatures, but it shouldn't actually be runny.
Mm-hmm.
Runny brie indicates that it's overripe and less than top quality. If you find that brie you've just bought is runny, check the sell-by date, and if you're within like a week or so's window, next time maybe try a different brand or buy it from a different store. It's still safe to eat. Just, I want you to have the best brie experience possible.
We care about you.
We do. And what's happening here that creates this runniness is that the lactic acid in the cheese is slowly breaking down into water and carbon dioxide, making the cheese less acidic, right? Less acid, less acidic. And that in turn makes the calcium that's holding the protein structures of the cheese together on hold.
Mm-hmm.
The calcium will migrate towards the surface of the cheese, making the rind stiffer and the inside runnier. That lower acidity can also change how proteins bond with each other and trigger enzymes like rennet in the cheese to start breaking down proteins again, both of which will make the cheese runnier still. Meanwhile, another texture that can happen in brie that has cool science behind it is having an oozy layer right under the rind with then a firmer center.
Mm-hmm.
This is called a cream line, and it happens when the yeasts and the molds living in the rind eat the lactic acid on the surface of the cheese, breaking it down and causing increasing ooziness. Again, this is totally okay to eat. But also, again, if the cream line is like super runny and the inside of the cheese is like chalky almost, again, the cheese is probably overripe. Less than perfect.
Less than perfect. Mm-hmm. If that's not a band, it should be. It's less than Jake adjacent.
Ooh, less than Jake cover band. That's... what I never wanted.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's an instant hit. Classic music.
Mm-hmm. It also translates well into my next point. A little bit of ammonia smell is natural.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, less than Jake. I didn't mean that about you. I've never met you. I'm sure you smell fine. No, in Brie cheese, a little bit of ammonia smell is natural. It's also the result of those surface fungi. Although, again, too much probably means the cheese is a little bit old. However, there is an important footnote to all of this. Different cheesemakers may have different goals in mind for their products. If you're in doubt or just curious, talk to the cheesemaker or a cheesemonger about how a particular cheese is meant to look and feel.
Yes, we can't recommend enough conversations with cheesemongers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, if any of y'all are a cheesemonger, let us know. Like, let us know if we can have you on call.
Yes.
Except maybe give us like a Google Voice number or something, because you don't want us to really have your cell phone number. We would be really obnoxious.
It would be like 3:58 a.m. and then emergency Brie question. That's what it would be, just so we're clear on like the job description.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love all of this science. Like my next Cheesegiving, I'm just going to take a minute and be grateful for all the science.
Yeah, for all the microbes, all the lactic acid.
The real heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And this brings us to the end of this episode and to
listener mail.
Yeah. It was like a showstopper.
Oh.
Because yeah. That's what Brie is.
It's true.
Robin wrote, I just had to send in some comments about fruitcake after listening to your latest episode. I could not even wait until the end of the episode before I started writing this email. People who do not like fruitcake, I maintain, have simply never had the opportunity to sample a truly high-quality product. There are a lot of bad fruitcakes out there. Do not be deceived. The products trucked out into the grocery stores at this time of year are dry, sad imitations. If you want a truly good fruitcake, go for something homemade. A Christmas craft fair or farmer's market is a good bet. We go to a nearby Christmas craft show every year, almost exclusively for the reason of buying the annual brick of fruitcake from the local vendor. It is all they sell, shelves and shelves of red and green foil-wrapped cakes, either a lighter cake or a dark variety. We always get the dark. It feels like you are receiving a lump of mud. It is so heavy. And the booth is always packed with returned customers who have the insider information on this annual treat. And dense it is, very dense, you are correct. I can only have a little at a time because of this density, one small slice. I am also glad it only comes around once a year. There are so many complex and amazing flavors going on. This thing is an intense experience, like a gripping novel told as an elevator pitch. How can so much interesting stuff be contained in such a small package? The sweetness of the fruit, the mellow nuts, the rich and dark alcohol-infused cake, and of course, all those lovely spices. A good cake is moist and dense, not dry and crumbly. No icing, though. I prefer the cake in splendid isolation. Although it can look nice with the white icing, the best cake stands on its own flavors without the icing. I am so determined to try a good fruit cake. A lot of you have written in fruit cake.
Definitely. I don't think I've heard a single... On Instagram, we did have like, oh, strange, it's shaped like a doorstop. Convenient comment come in to whichever lovely and snarky listener wrote that. I salute you. But yeah, lots of pro fruitcake humans out there.
Yeah, I gotta find a fruitcake. It'll happen.
It will. Chad wrote, my family has a tradition every Thanksgiving or around that time called the Pecan Duelers of America or PDA tournament. I was at the gym listening to the Food Fairy Tales, the Almond Tree episode, after spending time with my family in Oregon for Thanksgiving, and thought to myself, I should write in about PDA. Then you created the episode on pecans, and that was my sign from the pecan gods to write in. Back in 2006, while I was serving a mission for my church, my two brothers happened to find out that pecans are nature's natural tops. They began spinning them out of boredom, and then it became a tournament after that. Since 2006, we have held the PDA each year, only missing twice due to family being unable to gather due to moves and whatnot. I could spend several paragraphs explaining this tournament, but I'll keep it short. Each tournament begins with each player spinning several pecans to test and find their top six pecans. After six pecans have been chosen, the players then name said pecans. The tournament then begins with rounds consisting of best 2 out of 3 until the finals, which is best 5 out of 7. Each player gets one scratch per round because there are often times when one cannot get their pecan to spin correctly. Over the past 12 years, the tournament has evolved to making it shorter now that there are little ones around. My son, who is now 4, tried to play this year. He didn't quite get the hang of it, but he'll be taught the ropes soon. This was the first year that the tournament was held out of Utah, where my parents live. The tournament was held in Portland, Oregon, and next year will be held in Tucson, Arizona, where my family and I live. So we can now say that this tournament is a multi-state tournament.
That's fantastic.
That is so fantastic.
I've got to try it.
We do.
Spinning
pecans.
You're saying pecans, I've noticed.
Look, I said it twice when I felt like it was...
I'm not judging. I'm
appropriate.
Just merely commenting.
Maybe this is my inner secret agent coming out.
What if we're like opposing secret agents?
Oh, no.
Yeah. It'd be like the podcast version.
It's like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, except for Mr. and Mrs. Saver.
Yes. And then we both just bond over Brie and forget.
Yeah.
That we were supposed to, I don't know.
Probably slightly less action-packed.
Yeah.
Although I hear that you can throw knives.
I don't know who told you that. We should move on.
Anyway,
thanks to both of them for writing in. And if you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Thank you, as always, to our super producer, Dylan Fagan. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.